Now, the chair of the rugby board is standing by her threat that she will quit if she doesn't get what she wants, and what she wants is to overhaul the board completely in line with a review out last year, but she is getting resistance at the moment from the provincial unions.
The numbers going from schoolboy rugby back into the club scene, it's just not happening, and it's clear to everyone, and there are some concerns around that, and New Zealand Rugby are going, you know what, we have to have a conversation about how we keep these kids playing the game.
It's on New Zealand's side!
Well, I have two problems. One of them's called academies for any sport. So you're making it or not at the age of 13. And I think that's ridiculous.
And in your life, have you ever seen anything like it?
We're way down on our numbers. We're about 250, 280 kids down this year.
New Zealand are the champions!
Sandra says they're losing kids to other sports, especially basketball and football.
Eden Park absolutely erupts.
I've been in meetings where I've been told by CEOs of New Zealand Rugby, what would you know? People are always going to be watching, they're always going to be coming to the games. Well, guess what? They don't anymore. They just don't.
With the world champs.
Why have you fallen out of love with rugby?
I think one of the problems with rugby at the moment is that there's too many games that mean nothing. With this WAS season, every game meant something.
A lot of parents don't want their child to be tackling.
Yeah.
You know, it's all this. And because there's so much information at the moment about concussion, and as a parent, I can understand.
New Zealand celebrations again. They are World Cup winners once more. New Zealand 34, England 31.
Was it really just 17 months ago that New Zealand came alight as our Black Ferns stole the Women's Rugby World Cup from England?
Well, the landscape's certainly changed, and rugby's facing the biggest set of challenges that it's had to face probably since the early 80s.
I'm Alexia Russell, and on The Detail today, I bring in two of the sport's media stalwarts and ask them, what is wrong with rugby?
Well, I think there's an awful lot that's wrong with rugby.
This is long-time rugby journalist Phil Gifford.
When you've got a person like the patron of New Zealand rugby, Ian Kirkpatrick, saying that he feels there needs to be some really substantial changes to how the game is played and to some of the rules, then this is not a casual observer in the bar of a cozy club in a small town. You know, these are people that actually care about the game, that love the game, and increasingly, they're disenchanted with, there's a sort of a bunch of things really, but at the heart of the thing is, I think rugby to me, a sport that I've loved since I was 9 years old, is a sport that is under siege. It's as simple as that. Crowds are down, television audiences are down, the NPC, the provincial competition, draws tiny crowds. Club rugby is struggling to stay alive, especially in small towns. And so the game itself, I think, needs to have a really hard look and say, how can we make this game more attractive, A, to watch and B, to play?
And this is Sky's rugby commentator, Tony Johnson.
It's still a very popular game. Anecdotally, people will say, oh, look, I'm not interested in rugby anymore, or look at the crowd for that game, half empty, etc., etc. We tend to be a little bit selective in our memories. People go, you know, point back to the mid-80s and, oh, the crowds, you know, they used to have 30,000, 40,000. Well, yes, they did. They had 30,000 or 40,000 if Canterbury were playing Auckland for the Ranfurly Shield, because that was the biggest thing in the game back then. But I can tell you, I was at plenty of games through the 70s and 80s where you count the crowd in hundreds rather than thousands. So it wasn't always this sort of utopia of packed out crowds for every single game. Look, at the moment, it's not as good as it's been. You know, Super Rugby in its heyday, yes, got massive crowds all the time, and that has fallen away. But this year, the numbers, the attendances have been solid rather than spectacular, and the viewing figures are still very good. They are better than last year, which was better than the year before. So people watching at home or in a bar, the numbers are still good. The interest is still there. I think there is a perception, though, that the interest is waning. And it's something that certainly needs to be addressed, because that sort of negativity does tend to gnaw it away at the popularity of a sport.
Nonetheless, there are issues. Let's start with the one that made headlines last week.
I'm saying to the provincial unions, here's our opportunity to make sure that we are set up for strengthening not only the deep connection rugby has in New Zealand communities, but enabling us to thrive as a global professional sport.
NZ Rugby Board Chair Dame Patsy Reedy saying she'll resign if reforms don't happen. NZR's newly released proposal suggests 9 independent members for its future boards. Provincial unions, which won't have a specific seat at the table, want better representation.
We've been leading the rugby world for 135 years, but we need to have world-leading governance.
Provincial rugby, they feel the NPC teams, provincial teams, are not part of the pathway to the All Blacks. And so because of that, because players are going into academies for super rugby teams, these days you don't go as you would have in the amateur days, school rugby, club rugby, provincial rugby, All Blacks. Now you go basically school rugby almost straight into academies for super rugby teams, then super rugby and then All Blacks. And one part of that equation that seems to be increasingly skipped is provincial rugby. And because you don't see, you virtually never see All Blacks playing in provincial rugby, so the superstars aren't playing NPC games. And my feeling is that's a major reason why the audience, the crowd at the grounds for provincial rugby have increasingly thinned out to the point where occasionally it's almost embarrassing watching how small the crowds are.
Well, in many ways, this is the biggest issue confronting the game right now is the governance. We had this report, and from that report, it became pretty obvious that both the NPC, to use the words of the CEO, Mark Robinson, was no longer fit for purpose, but also the structure of the governance of the game was simply not appropriate for the game in the professional era. And so change is going to have to be made. The problem was that inevitably there was pushback from the provincial unions because in some cases they were being asked to vote themselves out of influence and in some even out of existence in some cases. The game has always answered to the provinces, and that suited us, particularly in the amateur era, that you didn't get to the top of New Zealand rugby unless you had the backing of the groundswell, the grassroots of the game. But nowadays, particularly you look at the state of provincial rugby, which is really financially in a very precarious situation. And so they've really decided that it needs a highly qualified board of expert people, experts in business, people, yes, with sporting knowledge.
Not ex-All Blacks who just haven't got any.
Well, it's not so much the ex-All Blacks in a way. It's the people who've been on the committees at, you know, club level, provincial level, sort of rising to the top. That's what used to happen back in the 50s and the 60s. They were the people that would rise to the top of the game. And so there has to be changes. And naturally enough, there's been quite a battle going on behind the scenes to push this through, you know, culminating in the threat by Dame Patsy Reddy to quit if it didn't get through, because I think she feels now that the game's not going to be sustainable under its current model. But look, rugby does have a great legacy of being able to reinvent itself when it really mattered. And I refer again to what happened in the 80s, the way it slowly confronted those issues, the way it met the challenges initially of professionalism, and I'm sure it will do it again, but it's just going through a very turbulent time at the moment. And in the meantime, all these other challenges are being faced in terms of the costs of the game and the popularity, rising popularity of other sports and so on.
So what were the specific problems that prompted that report?
Well, I think money. A lot of clubs survived on money, you know, brewery money. There was a lot of sponsor. A lot of the things that used to sponsor sport, I mean, I can remember the days, you know, I had a lot to do with softball, and softball was sponsored by a brewery and a cigarette company for a long time, and you just can't do that anymore. So some of that money's dried up, or quite a lot of money, I suppose, has dried up. Socially, things have changed as well. People don't gravitate to the rugby clubs in quite the way they used to. Some areas, yes, they still do. And some clubs like the University Club in Auckland, for example, which won the Club of the Year last year, have got massive activities and programs that are not just about kids turning up and playing rugby. It's about providing opportunities. So, but the club scene has changed since the advent of professionalism. Schools rugby, to me, is a huge concern because it's become very elitist. And the focus totally on the first 15, I think the televising of first 15 rugby had a bit to do with that, where schools were pouring all of their resources into their top players. And it's not just rugby that does that.
It's a problem that's been developing in New Zealand schools rugby for a long time. And it's an issue with a small number of schools with a large amount of money, and it makes life pretty difficult for the rest of us to compete on an even playing field.
The intense schoolboy rugby competition worries Phil Gifford too.
If you're a young man, and by the time you're 16 or 17, you've got a showreel of yourself from, well, they don't televise it now, but when they were televising, you've got a showreel of yourself, you've been spotted, you're on a contract, then the idea of a person developing as a human being compared with a rugby player, it's a strange way to go. I mean, it leans now a little bit, I think, towards, for example, the NFL system, where a college football player in America then goes straight into professional NFL. And the ones that don't, I don't know what the hell they do, because they've really prepared for nothing except playing NFL. And so some of the things that have happened in First 15 Rugby, especially in Auckland, because there's disquiet there too amongst a bunch of the schools about the more wealthy schools picking the eyes out of the First 15s from schools that don't have the money to actually keep their players.
10 of Auckland's top rugby high schools have signed a letter to St Kentigan College saying that they'll no longer play the school in the elite Auckland rugby competition. It's known as the Auckland 1A First 15. St Kentigan has been accused of poaching top players from rival schools.
Another thing you mentioned in the article you wrote for the Herald was that other sports really are nipping at rugby's heels now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, basketball, for example, is, well, if you combine basketball and football, they've got almost together, they have almost twice the school participation that rugby does. That has to be a concern. All this whole range of sports, as it should be, are now available to young men and women at school. And again, it gets back to the thing where I've felt for a long time that if you were running rugby in New Zealand, I feel you have to have the attitude that you are desperately fighting to save a sport, to keep a sport alive, which is not a bad attitude to have, I think, because that's, to me, is almost what it is.
Well, that comes full circle too. I mean, the reason why parents particularly want their kids doing these other sports is because they're less likely to get whacked in the head.
Oh, it's a huge issue. There's absolutely no question about that. There are so many parents that I know that have kids that are at school now that are very keen for the boys and girls to play basketball, to play netball, to play football, because for that exact reason. And the fact is, again, it's another thing going back to that height of the tackle and so on. Rugby really is a sport that has to make every possible effort. It's a physical contact sport, so yes, of course, unfortunately, as we saw on the weekend with Cam Roygaard.
The Hurricanes have confirmed the halfback suffered a rupture of his left patella tendon in the Super Rugby win over the Highlanders. It'll see Roygaard sidelined for 6 months, having undergone surgery in Auckland yesterday.
There are going to be, even in the most innocent of circumstances, with no intent to injure, you are going to have some nasty sort of injuries, because when people are running at high speed into each other and are legally allowed to tackle each other, then there is always the potential for injury. But again, it gets back to the thing where rugby, I think, has to do everything it can without completely gutting the game, because it is a physical contact sport. You just can't get away from that. And if you take that out of it, then you've got touch footy, which I think is a wonderful sport, but I don't think you're going to get 50,000 people going to Eden Park to watch a touch football international. Then you just have to make damn sure that everybody is aware of the fact that the rules are trying to make the game as safe as possible, and that also that you do the thing which in years past, sadly, it was never really an issue. You make damn sure that if a person's concussed, hell, even boxing decided years and years ago, but if a person's concussed, then you stop them from fighting or sparring for weeks and weeks until they're better. Rugby is, to be fair to rugby, it's getting much better at that, but I think it has to get even better, and I think it has to do everything it can to publicise the fact that it is aware of the possible physical dangers.
You look at other sports like basketball now, I think, is the most popular, particularly amongst males. I think netball still might have a bit of an edge there just in terms of overall numbers. But the one that seems to be attracting a lot is volleyball. They had between 22 and 23, there was a 41% increase in the number of people playing volleyball. Now, these sports have, great attraction. Firstly, they are physical, robust enough, but without so
no
much
one's
chance
hitting you in the head.
Well, exactly. Yeah, the head injury thing. But also the pathway in those sports. I mean, friends of ours, their daughter has just signed on a volleyball scholarship to go to one of the top colleges in the United States. Education paid for because she's a good volleyball player. Basketball offers that as well. So those sports are offering, yes, there's a pathway for professional rugby, and some players can make a lot of money out of it, or rugby league. You know, there are professional, you know, openings in netball, etc. But, you know, when you are, if you're 17 or 18 years of age and someone in the States is offering you 3 years expenses paid and your education to go with it and a chance to play that sport professionally in the United States afterwards, well, that is proving to be a huge magnet for a lot of young players. And so these are the challenges facing not just rugby, but other traditional sports like netball, hockey even, which remains a very popular game. Some sports have suffered a dramatic drop away in the numbers competing. Athletics and swimming, for example, which is so demanding. Rowing's still popular. But you know, some of these sports, particularly with that college link in the States, are proving extremely attractive.
But isn't rugby awash with money now?
It has been big news. Well, for the last 6 months, we've been hearing the words Silver Lake, this US technology giant that wants to invest big money in our game right here in Aotearoa, New Zealand.
We believe there's enough opportunity in this deal and the way we've structured it and all the modelling we've done that everyone in the game can benefit. No one needs to go backwards here.
Under the Silver Lake deal, NZ Rugby was valued at $3.5 billion. The private equity firm took a stake that will eventually be worth 7.5%.
I think everyone saw this as being the total quick fix for the financial woes of the game. But the thing is, you know, the other side of it is that they've got to make money for the company that's invested as well. And the last thing they wanted to do was spend money bailing out unsustainable provincial rugby entities. So it perhaps hasn't quite had the impact that people thought it was going to have. Yeah, I think the jury's still out, and we're not really going to know, you know, how successful, how good a deal it was for a few years yet.
In sport, New Zealand Rugby concedes it will be a struggle to get back in the black next year after posting a near $50 million loss. In its annual report, the organisation has revealed a financial year loss of $47 million, a reversal of the $5.5 million surplus in 2022, which was the organisation's first profit since 2017.
I think a lot of the provinces have got themselves into trouble trying to be competitive by spending money they don't have on players they can't afford. And that happened in Super Rugby as well. And no question, NPC in some areas has been really bleeding money. And they've got to get real about that. They've got to, I think, either compress it. And at the moment, that seems to be the favoured option, is that you just have to
combine unions.
Well, yeah. Or some unions will just have to drop out of it and play in the heartland. If they can't be financially sustainable themselves without being topped up, and unfortunately, from what I'm hearing, is already too much of the Silver Lake money, this big cash injection that New Zealand Rugby had, has been spent on debt maintenance.
The Silver Lake thing, not being an international financier, it was always a bit bemusing to me, but I must say initially I found it very disconcerting that David Kirk, who I would suggest is one of the most successful former All Blacks in business in the world, David Kirk was opposed to the original deal and eventually came around to the deal that has been struck now. But at the moment, we've got this incredible arm wrestle going on basically between the provinces and between the Council of New Zealand Rugby. And how that's resolved is kind of fascinating as well. It's such a tricky situation to me that in the end, all you want are the best men and women on that board. Now, whether you get that with a formula or whether you get it just by popular vote or not, who the hell knows? But I do think that just at the moment, when rugby, I think, is on quite fragile grounds in many ways, we need the very best possible men and women running the game.
Then there are the rules.
It seems to be that every time they come up with a law to try and make the game more simple, it turns out, you know, you're opening a can of worms, and the knock-on effect is that it makes the game more complicated. No question, the rugby law book is a huge, unwieldy collection of laws, some of which don't make a lot of sense.
Alexia, nobody understands the rules. the rule book is like, goodness gracious me, it's like a book that explains how to put together a computer. You know, I mean, the laws are very complicated, but there are a few things that I would certainly hope there's enough intellectual heft in the rugby world. And for the likes of Wayne Smith, for example, who has some very straightforward ideas about how to stop the rolling maul, which is one of the obscenities in the game at the moment, because to me it looks like legalised obstruction. There are certain things I think that are a real issue, and the rolling maul is one. The other issue that I think would make a hell of a difference to the game, and that's the level of the tackles, making the level of the tackles at the chest line, the nipple line. And if they do that and you can only tackle below that, then it, first of all, it eliminates or would hopefully eliminate virtually all of the head clashes that are a curse on the game and that lead to red cards, and also, more importantly, sadly, potentially lead to head injuries.
And Phil Gifford points out that World Rugby's in for a huge dose of bad publicity this year. A group of players, including former All Black Carl Heyman, are taking legal action, claiming the sport's ignoring growing scientific evidence that head knocks cause brain injuries.
I mean, what a story, and one for the history books for this New Zealand side.
But what about the good news? The rise of women's rugby.
In 2022, when the Women's Rugby World Cup was here, I absolutely loved it, as I think anybody who enjoyed rugby would have. There was something about that team, the way they played the game, the joy they brought to the game. There was a great line that Graham Henry, who assisted Wayne Smith with the Black Ferns, said that he felt that for young men playing rugby, they had to win to be happy. And what he discovered with the Black Ferns was, with these brilliant women playing rugby, they had to be happy to play well and to win. Yeah. You know? And Graham Henry actually said, I wonder if I got it wrong all those years that I was coaching men.
45,000 at Eden Park to a final of a Women's Rugby World Cup. Nobody ever thought that was possible. And they loved it. And people were asked to leave at the end of the game. They wouldn't leave the stadium.
Women's rugby has been an absolute revelation. What's happened since, I understand that numbers are up, but it is one of those things, again, I think it's a big decision for New Zealand rugby to make sure that huge boom in interest and enjoyment and joy. Look, I have to admit, I'm very glad that I'm not around the board table trying to decide how much money do you put into women's rugby, because right at the moment, the fact is that the women's Super Rugby competition is not actually drawing the sort of crowds that would make it standalone practical. And yet, it's an unexploited thing that we've got here that potentially could be a huge thing, I think, for rugby. But how you go about financing that, that's a massive issue.
The success of our Sevens team, but also the Black Ferns at the World Cup, that's been such a huge boost to rugby. And that is, again, one of the big challenges they're facing, is how do you build on that? How do you maximise it? Because I don't think we've anywhere near reached the potential that women's rugby has in New Zealand.
That's Game Over for today. Thanks to Phil Gifford and Tony Johnson. This episode was engineered by Jeremy Ansell and produced by Gwen McClure and Davina Zimmer. The Detail is supported by RNZ and NZ On Air. I'm Alexia Russell. Mā te wā.